I'm honored to be here with you again. This Saturday is the day you might notice I don't have my usual casual dress on the weekend. My wife and I, Patricia, are going out of town to an event that was organized by the Black Alliance for Just Immigration and the organization called PAN, Priority Africa Network. We're going to sit down with some individuals that have been involved in trying to bring about justice in Africa and begin to learn about what's going on in terms of their concerns and the impacts of what we do here in the United States that affects African immigrants and our U.S. foreign policy in terms of how it's destroying Africa, bringing about injustice in Africa. So I don't have my usual attire. I'm going to meet someone I have never met before, and we want to have a very deep discussion. So we're going to begin to try to translate some of our understandings from different languages and different concerns to bring about some sense of unity. It's kind of like what we do here on Saturdays. We come together as a diverse group of people with different backgrounds, different concerns, in order to unify our talents, our powers and our diversity to stand together and speak together. We each have a jihad, a personal jihad. We're responding, as the minister said, to what happened to Oscar Grant. And we're coming here to speak out in terms of that jihad and to find some sense of unity, because there's power in unity.
That's right.
There's an African proverb that talks about the single stick and how easy it is to break, but when you bring those sticks together in a bundle, they're unbreakable.
That's right.
And so that's what we are building here.
Unbreakable.
We come from different places and we share our information and our concerns and bring them together in terms of a unified voice. I don't want to take a lot of time, but I did have the opportunity this week to sit down with an attorney who's very much involved in bringing cases against the police and the police department and those kind of criminal justice institutions. So I sat down with him because I wanted to learn from him some of what Attorney Raines's legal strategy might be in terms of what he's doing, so that I could share that with us, so that as we begin to unify our strategy and our forces, we'll be able to do it with some sense of understanding about how the system works and what Raines is about, and then be able to calculate our voices and our unity in a way that would be most effective to bring about the justice that we're seeking. So I sat down for lunch with this attorney. He's been fairly successful in actually winning cases against the police department and understanding what's that about in order to turn that around. And there was a number of things that he said that I found very interesting. You won't be surprised about what he has to say. It's things that you probably know in some sense yourself, because we all live in this system. We all confront the police all the time, and we all watch the courts, and we know over some period of time what the courts are and what they're about and what they do. So when he told me that Attorney Raines was no question was a racist, That didn't surprise me. Some of you who have read the brief that Raines put out in order to try to change the venue of the Oscar Grant case, they were a case against Messora, can clearly see the racism jump out of that brief as you go through that brief. But what we may not have as much a handle on, which this attorney helped us to see, helped me to see, is that that legal strategy was intended to do a number of things. One of the things that it was intended to do is try to push our buttons. Those of us who are concerned about racism in this country and have been watching it for some time are very sensitive for when we see racism displayed. And sometimes, you know, we're also, and I don't want to go too much into this, but I got to say a little bit about it, Pastor. We are animals of two minds. We have the natural mind that some people call it the reptilian brain, where our emotions are housed. You know, as animals, as human beings are animals, we learn about what's going on in our environment, and emotions are closely tied to our reaction to what we face within that environment. And so when we see something that is dangerous, our emotions then immediately tip us into either fighting or running away. It's a quick response. It doesn't even go through the rest of your brain. It's an immediate response of your body and your reptilian mind. And then we also have a forebrain. I don't want to go into this too long. My partner's giving me a signal about it. But we have a forebrain, which actually doesn't fully develop until you get to be about 25, where the forebrain makes connections to your reptilian brain. And the forebrain, the signals go to the forebrain, and the forebrain makes a judgment about it. And then the forebrain can change that reaction to one that has taken into account more of the cultural and other kinds of signals that are available to us. We begin to think about it a little bit. So we may see something that our body tells us is dangerous, but our forebrain says, let's think about that a moment before we react to it and see if there's a better way to deal with it, a more successful way to deal with it. So Raines wrote something that I immediately got hit in my reptilian brain about it. This is a dangerous, bad thing that he did, but his intention was to have that kind of reaction. So if we want justice, it's got to be both about the heart, the emotions, but it also has got to be about the forebrain and the mind. We got to be whole and work together in terms of our response in a holistic way so that we can begin to strengthen our response in a way that's most effective. So understanding what his intention is a very important part of us doing that kind of analysis and deciding how best we might want to move forward. So I talked to him about what was in that brief in terms of its legality, in terms of the references, in terms of the legal power of it that a judge would look at to see whether or not he's justified in calling for the case to be moved to another county. And the analysis is that it's weak in terms of its legal analysis. It's not strong in terms of its legal analysis. There are precedents that have been set in the court as to what makes sense to move a case into another jurisdiction. Well, his case is weak in that regard, so if it's just a judge who's going on the basis of the legal information, This attorney informed me it's not likely that on that basis that the case would be moved. So if he's not going to move the case, what is he doing to do this whole long brief that's all over the place? You know, jurors are chosen from the whole county of Alameda County. Yes, sir. Oh, okay. I thought you were saying you wanted to ask me a question. All right. So jurors are chosen from all over Alameda County. But if you read Raines' brief, he focuses on Oakland only, as if this is where all the jurors were going to come from. That's illogical. That's illogical. We know that jurors are chosen from all over Alameda County. So you're going to have some folks that live out in the suburbs and the urban and the rural areas of Alameda County that are going to end up on that jury. So arguing that just because there is a higher concentration of African Americans who are sensitive to racial issues and are sensitive to police brutality is a reason to move the jury, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense because the jury is going to contain people from all over Alameda County. But it's a dangerous, very dangerous concept to talk about moving the jury to another county because it changes the context. It changes the context of what happens in that trial. He told me a little bit of interesting thing that I didn't know about the O.J. Simpson case. You know, at the time of the O.J. Simpson case, L.A. had gone through a lot of racial tensions. Just before the O.J. Simpson case, there was a case about the Korean store where a young black woman was shot in a Korean store. And the shooter got off, I think, with 30 days for having killed this black woman, black young lady in this Korean store. 14-year-old girl, absolutely. So the attorney told me that one of the key things that happened in terms of why O.J. Simpson got off on the criminal trial was because the ministers in L.A. went in and sat down with the district attorney of L.A. County and told the district attorney, don't let this guy kick all the blacks off of the jury. Keep more African Americans on the jury. So when that attorney attempted, when they were choosing the jury, to kick all the blacks off, the district attorney who was trying the case stood up and did a motion because there is legal precedent for not allowing one particular race or group of people to be kept out of the jury. So he stood up and made that motion so that there would still be African Americans on the jury who would be more sympathetic to the situation that happened with O.J. because there were some racist cops that were involved in O.J. being in the situation that he was in. So if we're talking about moving the trial to another county, the implications are that, number one, you're going to have more people who are more sympathetic to this cop, Mesereau, and you're going to have more people who will be less sensitive to Oscar Grant and who he was. They'll see him as just another Oakland black young man who probably deserved to be thrown on the ground and shot on the back. So it's a dangerous thing that Raines is doing, but it's weak legally, but it's written in such a way to push our buttons because he's hoping that we'll go out and do some things to justify moving the trial. So I think we ought to know that and take that into account when we're considering what our reaction should be to this case. One other thing I just want to mention also. We have a situation here where politics, this won't surprise you either, politics is going to be involved in what happens in this case.
That's right.
So we had a former district attorney, I'm forgetting his name now. Orloff was the former district attorney. He's no longer the district attorney.
Praise God.
Right. Thanks to a lot of our efforts, I think we ought to take some credit for that. So we put some pressure on Orloff. Orloff ended up bringing the case. It's a historical case. First time in the state of California that a police officer has been charged with murder. That's historical. First time that a police officer has been charged. He's not convicted yet. So we got some more work to do. But Orloff, considering what happened with the Ryder's case, which he brought to trial, I think it was three times and failed each time, trying to convict the Ryder's in Oakland, in a regular jurisdiction without moving the case. They wasn't able to convict it. So that doesn't, you know, that doesn't bode well for us. So moving it would make it even worse. But Orloff decided to resign all of a sudden. All of a sudden he decided to resign because he's got an election he would have had to run next June, an election coming up in June. So already, because he brought the case against the Ryder's, even though he lost, the police officers and police officers' families and friends don't like him. Because he brought that case, and then he brought the case against Massaro. So, you know, he's not going to get a lot of votes from that community anymore. They're mad at him. We're mad at him because he was so slow in bringing the case around against Massaro. And it wasn't until the last minute that Stein began to do some things that shows that they were going to take that case seriously. So Orloff, looking at the election coming up, saying, hey, I've been here, 40 years? I don't need this. Let me resign. And let me try to put Becky O'Malley, his second in command, into that place. So he ran that little trick we all were aware of. We talked about it, I think, last week, as the DA. So what we did was we talked to a number of attorneys around to kind of get some sense of both O'Malley and as well as what they thought about Orloff. Well, this attorney that I talked to gave me some interesting insight about the response that we got from other attorneys about O'Malley and about Orloff. And that is that even the defense attorneys, criminal case attorneys, have to deal with the district attorney's office in order to get various motions through and agreements and reduce the charges against their clients and so forth. So this is their bread and butter, and they have to work with the district attorney's office in order to be able to accomplish what they're supposed to accomplish. So are they going to badmouth the DA and then have to walk into his office and try to get a deal for their client after they've badmouthed the DA? Of course not. So what we hear then from a lot of those attorneys is not the truth in terms of the quality and character of either O'Malley or of Orloff. So let's take that into account. We're going to have to do some of our own digging because they're not going to publicly come out and speak against the DA because they got to go in and do something for their clients with this person. So that was also very interesting. But the last part of this that I want to mention is the thing that I think we really have to watch very closely is now that Orloff is gone, whatever happens in this case, he can say it didn't happen on his watch. He brought the charges, somebody else was DA now. So the question is then, what is O'Malley going to do? And part of our analysis has been, we need to watch this very carefully because now O'Malley's going to have to run for re-election in June. She's got a clean slate because she wasn't the DA with the Ryder's case. She wasn't the DA when this was brought against Massaro. So she can still pull on that constituency in order to get support for her re-election. So it seems, doing the political analysis, that what O'Malley might want to do is allow the case, even though it's weak legally, to allow the case to be to go to another venue. Because then the media attention to it is reduced. And she doesn't have to continually have to deal with the questions that get brought up during the course of that trial. And when June rolls around, she can say, oh, we just did the best that we can. You know, there's all kinds of problems, and try to get our support. And there are clearly levers that she could use in order to continue to get our support. And one thing about O'Malley is that she has worked very hard working with the city of Oakland and with a number of other institutions about some things that we might want to see, like a domestic violence center in Oakland to deal with the domestic violence situation, which is what it is, what her specialty is. So she can hang on that and allow the court, the trial, to be moved to another venue. And then she's in a better political position. So it's critical that we begin to follow this case in terms of the legal strategy. And we need to talk to Stein, who's carrying the case for the district attorney's office, and let him know that if there's more than two African Americans kicked off the jury, he's got to stand up and bring that same motion that they brought in the O.J. Simpson case and say, no, don't allow him to take any more blacks off of the jury. Because clearly his brief could also affect the judge. The judge reads his brief, even though he doesn't allow the case to be moved, the judge may give him more leniency and to kick more African Americans off the jury. We don't want that to happen. So we've got to make sure that we watch Stein very carefully, understand his legal strategy, and push him as we push Orloff to stand up and to take this case down to the line, because this man, Messero, deserves to be convicted. Thank you.
I want to thank Brother Wilson for his research and dialogue with us, helping to broaden our view of this as we approach it, knowing that this is a political animal that we're wrestling down. One of the things to keep in mind as we are making ourselves heard is what our brother stated. As they're playing political games over whether or not a trial should stay or go, well, this is not gamesmanship to us. This is the lives of our people, and this is our demand for justice. This is not the kind of reason that we would allow the district attorney's office to figure out, how do I get law enforcement support when I run for office again? How do I please them? Barb has already shown how to do that with the assembly bill that was attempted by Assemblyman Swanson. They threw out, which would displease the law enforcement authorities. They just cast it out altogether, hoping it would go through without law enforcement being held to account by anybody other than its chief. Well, certainly as we're looking at this issue, I'm reminded that it was Jerry Brown who told us after Operation Nutcracker that if you can build a movement that is, in essence, as powerful as the one that I'm pandering to when we send police with tanks and high-powered weapons and the like to to arrest a handful of so-called gang members. You know, they're feeding that thing to the point that they've now run a special on the Discovery Channel on the city of Oakland about its 10,000 gang members. Mm. And the sad thing was, they showed there is a slight increase in Latino gangs. However, if you watch the show, it spent more time showing black youth out at sideshows. And affiliated sideshows with street gang warfare, 10,000 strong, and the police outgunned. That's the way they're conveying this. Well, we don't have time for the DA to play politics so that our young people continually find themselves criminalized and tased and shot, or shot by an officer who said, I thought I was pulling a taser that I never needed. And so, as we bring on our special report, we want us to be very clear that the DA should hear, just in case, that she is planning to maneuver politically out of the county. She should hear that everybody is not pleased with the politics that make law enforcement officers the most powerful unions in the area. She should hear that the community would not vote her into office. In fact, we would organize against her 1,000% if she runs for office and lets this case go to secure law enforcement support. If that's how she feels, then she should move out of the county and go live where they live.
That's it. Right.
She can go live in Napa. She can go live in some other area, Sacramento County, and drive in here for a job. But if she wants an elected office, then the people of our county must be represented properly. Mr. Stein works for Ms. O'Malley. And very clearly, his position is the position of Ms. O'Malley. So Ms. O'Malley has the lever of power. Mr. Stein may be a very capable courtroom attorney. We hope so, because he's got the case. But remember, he represents an elected official that unfortunately was not elected, but was selected by Tom Warloff as his hand-picked successor. And so we want to hear more of the details about the legal brief and how we can better understand it and how we can add our voices to the voices of dissent who are not rubber stamping whatever it is the district attorney may choose to do, but in fact demand that the district attorney as an elected official represent the best interests of the people. So please join me in receiving from, by any means necessary, our sisters and brothers from BAM, Sister Yvette, and attorney
Ashante Driver.
I'm sorry. Senior moment. Please receive our assistance with a big round of applause.